72 of the Anarchist News Podcast, digest and or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This is for the week of June 20th through June 26th, 2026. What's new this week? Under the Starry Sky, a Summer's Night, Reflections on Anarchy and Revolution, from Autonomies. I left it too late to read this carefully. It's a refreshing text that is the announcement of, and some quick translations of, a new book in French by Maria Cacogiani. So I have for now only surface thoughts on this, but for people who are looking for new models of social change, Cacogiani seems to be a step in a good direction. There are plenty of bits here that I would have been happy to quote, some of them more opaque, some less, but for now we'll go with this. Quote, "The between two worlds, the between two settings, the between two laws can be double. It is either what maintains the order of one and the other, or what positively anarchizes one and the other. In the between the two, there are two options, the police and anarchy. One calls for order or a cosmic laugh. One calls for order or for what unsettles the ontological divisions between what is and what is not, what counts and what does not, what is possible and what is not. A positive anarchy does not oppose itself to a world. It plays at the edges of worlds, in the passageways from one to another." Unquote. Sometimes these things make me teary. Don't ask me.
Italy, about the June 16th raids on anarchists. Why do these things make you teary?
Because there's something about...
From squat.net, more repression from the Italian state, as various states around the world compete to see who can get the most draconian the fastest. The writers here point out that role of language, some of the state's hypocritical accusations, and that people will always resist. Quote, "While Alfredo Cospito remains in a prison regime of 41 bis as a kind of scapegoat for the defects of the entire anarchist movement, the state goes so far as to criminalize the very intention to act to save him from torture. While we still have to catch our breath after the death of Sarah and Sandro, the state is trying to use it against us. We do not know whether the people arrested and wanted committed the acts of which they are accused. We can only repeat what we have written so many times in similar cases. If they are innocent, they have all our solidarity. If they are guilty, they have even more." Unquote.
The Assumptive Logic of Anarchism, from The Flame That Survived the Rain, by Charlie Banga and Anarca Semilla.
On the plane in Spain.
This is the beginning of a takedown of mostly classical anarchists for ignoring some terrible things in their analysis of how power works and who counts as human. To my read, the point of the piece is in the last two paragraphs. Quote, "To be more frank, we are not trying to find ways to fit blackness into the classification of the human, because, as Zakiya Iman Jackson and Sadia Hartman remind us, it already exists there, albeit at the most degraded, fungible, and abject levels due to its elastic, mutable, and stretchable nature. That particular conceptual dilemma and problem site is what Jackson, specifically, calls ontological plasticity, a mode of transmogrification whereby the fleshy being of blackness is experimented with as if it were infinitely malleable lexical and biological matter, such that blackness is produced as sub/super/human, at once, a form where form shall not hold, potentially everything and nothing, at the register of ontology." Unquote. To give my opinion, fully acknowledging that it is irrelevant to the writers here, Afro-pessimism's weakness lies in its positing of blackness as an oppression. This competition is a way to encourage an urgency that makes total sense, but competition between oppressed folks is ultimately self-defeating. This is not to say that the struggles of oppressed people are the same. In fact, comparative racisms are terribly under-theorized. To put it broadly, because getting into the details is distracting here, oppressed peoples are oppressed in varying ways that act against and with each other, and each ought to be understood in its own fullness. So when they start by saying, quote, "at the central part of our black anarchist and Afro-pessimist analysis, our anarcho-Afro-pessimist critique, if you will, is the claim that anarchism, whether it be post, social, or individualist, have yet to thoroughly account for the Negro problem that underpins contemporary anarchic ideologies, which stems from classical anarchism's historical ties to Enlightenment humanism." Unquote. One can only say, yes, absolutely. Although expecting anyone to thoroughly account for the Negro problem might be a tad unfair.
Bakunin on National Self-Determination from Black Flag Anarchist Review by Wayne Price. You know, transmogrification makes me think of Calvin and Hobbes.
And it makes him burp.
Did you chuckle?
He burped.
It was a laugh in my mind.
He burped.
It was a laugh.
He burped.
Bakunin on National Self-Determination from Black Flag Anarchist Review by Wayne Price. There are things that I appreciate about Wayne Price. He continues to argue it out with people online, and he continues to be in good faith, at least to the extent of his understanding, though some commenters have claimed that there is some agenda involved in his reiteration of points in the face of informed pushback. I have a soft spot for him, but this first paragraph of this piece ends with a classic misinterpretation that, if anything, has me pondering the whole good faith question. The sentence is, quote, "Many deny that anarchists can support the efforts of oppressed peoples for independence from imperialist domination," unquote. That, of course, is not what people are denying. Price insists that there is only one way for oppressed people to resist imperialist domination, and that it involves fighting in whatever military has the best chance of winning. Anarchists, of course, just don't accept that joining a state military is an anarchist option. And, of course, it would be nice if he could acknowledge that there are other ways to resist. But instead, he starts out this whole piece by ignoring what folks have been saying to him ad nauseum for years now. Moving on.
The Platform at 100, Voices of Organized Anarchists Around the Globe, Volume 1, from Black Rose Federation. Talks with platformists from around the world explaining why they are correct and the platform, and consequently mass mobilization, is the way. Or is it mass mobilization and consequently the platform? Potato, potato.
Chicken, egg, right? Against the cell. Illegalism after Prairie Land, against legibility, how movements become evidence. From Anonymous. By Fiona of Distinctively Dionysian. An argument against legible structure. Here is the heart of the argument. Quote, "Opacity should not be confused with secrecy. Secrecy concerns information. Opacity is about form. A person may speak publicly, publish openly, maintain visible relationships, and remain difficult to incorporate into a prosecutable structure. An organization may operate transparently, announce its activities, publish its intentions, and still become highly legible. Visibility and legibility are related, yet they are not identical. The problem is not exposure, the problem is organization." Unquote. It goes on to suggest that we learn more from the illegalists and emphasize friendships more than organizations. Woo-hoo. This is an articulate and informed attempt to deal with our changing circumstances. And this is one perspective to consider when acting in the world. To my mind, it disregards what seems like the absolute willingness of the state to make shit up. The consequence of that being that we figure out ways to work with and within prisons more effectively. But all trains of thought that try to shift folks from the defaults we're all familiar with are welcome here. Well worth reading.
This is Injustice, How Leftist Zines Were Used to Sentence Anti-ICE Protesters to Decades in Prison, from The Guardian by Les McMenamin. One of various good Guardian articles about the Prairie Land travesty, which stand out especially because most of the other articles on the topic have sucked. The New York Times, for example, doing things like starting with the mistake that Antifa is a movement and ending with a quote from the prosecution. Almost makes you want to get a Guardian subscription. Anyway, lots of hoopla because the sentences are insanely fucking long, big jump up even from increased lengths of recent decades. Also, lots of comparing to the January 6th defendants. Anyway, we need to be shocked since it helps get our friends money for defense and shit. Fuck the state and the media, in case you forgot.
Open letter from May Day Anarchist Prisoners 2026, Bandung, Indonesia. From Anonymous. Beginning parts of this sound like it's someone on the outside talking to a prisoner, but then it morphs into a report on the sadness of the isolation that is inherent to being in prison, out of touch unless people on the outside make a real effort, since prisons are all about removing people from their bases in all the ways that can happen. Although the U.S. does seem to be outdoing that by sending folks to countries they've never even been to. But that's a different diatribe. Anyway, write to anarchist prisoners.
Hello, everyone. This is Artemis.
This is Hibiscus.
This is the Anarchist News Podcast. We are reading Criminal Anarchy in Minnesota from Birds Before the Storm. This is by Margaret Killjoy, and this is for the Sunday, the 28th of June, 2026.
Criminal Anarchy in Minnesota, or Thought Crime and Flimsy Cases. I had this whole post written for you today. It was about how much I love books. It was about how I haven't read enough novels this year. About how I love audiobooks, but there's a particular joy found in forcing the entire world to slow down so that you can sit in a chair and read fiction printed with ink on paper. But I can't always make the world slow down, and I woke up yesterday to a text from Minneapolis. ICE has shut down my street. They're raiding my neighbor. It wasn't long before I saw a video of one of the arrests. Of a man named Isaac, who is accused of conspiracy to impede the efforts of law enforcement. He was led out of his house and he had his head held high, and he calmly gave his name and information to the neighbors who had come out to support him. The feds seem to want to throw the book at this man and 14 other people. There are 276 allegations made in the 94-page indictment. I won't link it directly because it is hosted on a .gov website, but it is easily searchable. I used Indictment of 15 Minneapolis. The group of them are accused of all sorts of crimes, almost none of which involve anything that a layperson would presume to be criminal, because they're being accused of conspiracy. In short, and I am not a lawyer, a conspiracy is when two or more people come together and say, we should do the following crime. We've got free speech, so it's not inherently illegal to say, what if we did crime? But as soon as any of these people take any overt acts, including otherwise legal acts, in furtherance of the conspiracy, it's criminal conspiracy and everyone is liable. If you and I were in a room and I said, we should steal candy out of vending machines, and later you looked up the blueprints of a vending machine, the state might have a conspiracy case against us, even though talking about crime is legal and looking up information is legal. It's a fantastic loophole if you're the state, by which to prosecute otherwise constitutionally protected behavior. So there's this 94-page indictment with 276 numbered allegations against members of a group called DAM, Direct Action Minnesota. I'm very critical of most protest group names, but damn, that's a good one. And nearly every one of those allegations is simply a description of what's involved in organizing protests. The government alleges that they coordinated their actions via Signal. The government alleges that they transported shields in a pickup truck. The government alleges that they used vetting processes to determine who should be trusted. The government alleges that many of them have self-identified as anarchists.
Whoa!
The government alleges that they organized blockades at the Whipple Building, the headquarters of their occupation of the Twin Cities. Blockades. Shields. During the press conference, the state brought up the indictees' aggressive use of shields, without a trace of irony in its voice. At the very, very end of the indictment, one of the indictees, allegation number 275, is alleged to have kicked a police car, and another one of the 15, allegation number 276, is alleged to have used a car as a dangerous weapon and caused an injury to a police officer. Most people I've talked to assume that that final allegation is referring to a minor traffic accident with a police vehicle. It certainly wasn't a big enough incident to appear in any news stories I could find, nor was this the only allegation of injury important enough to be mentioned in the press conference. Nor was this only allegation of injury important enough to be mentioned in the press conference. Over and over again in the indictment, the government alleges that the indictees self-describe as anarchists. Much of this evidence was gathered from public talks given on a public tour that aimed to show the country how people organized in the Twin Cities. It is absolutely clear that the potential anarchist identity of some of the organizers is a large part of the case against people. The word anarchist appears far, far more often throughout the text than the word Antifa, the name of the listed domestic terror group that the state desperately wants people to believe exists. Of course, it's not illegal to be an anarchist. It's protected free speech.
I, for example, am an anarchist. I believe that society should be organized from the bottom up, not the top down. I believe that we can build our society in horizontal structures. The concept of the state, which anarchists oppose, alongside other oppressive hierarchical structures like patriarchy, racism, and capitalism, is a relatively new one in human history, and anarchists are not actually opposed to organization and working together. We've got a scary name, of course. It's one that has led to a lot of confusion, because it's so often misunderstood, as I've written about before, which includes a link. In this case, I presume the state is relying on the popular misunderstanding of anarchism. They say, quote, these people are anarchists, end quote, because they want people to believe that the indictees are Batman villains who are out to sow chaos and destruction wherever they go. Is that not what we're doing? Sowing destruction where we're going? The FBI does know what anarchism is, of course. I've read explainers put together by our enemies that I actually understand what we're about in broad strokes. Quote, know your enemy is a basic and core principle of warfare. But they won't be including a rational explanation of who we are and what we're about in an indictment like this. The press conference yesterday was short, and it's honestly sort of amusing to watch, which includes another link. The state presents the scary evidence, like people's Facebook pages that include slogans like, we must become ungovernable, or a social media banner image of a burning police precinct from 2020. The journalists in the room are all incredibly competent. They say, and I'm going to paraphrase herein, quote, if there was a conspiracy to commit violent acts, do you point out any violent acts they committed? And the government simply said, read the indictment. The journalist said, quote, if you're trying to press charges against violent criminals, then you're going to press charges against law enforcement officers who killed Good and Preddy. The government said, if our investigation into those cases supports an indictment. One journalist directly said it sounded like the government was accusing people of thought crime, which is fitting because one of the allegations against the indictees that the indictee wrote for an article for CrimeThink. If you were to commit thought crime too, you can read CrimeThink, an anarchist collective that puts together some of the best news and analysis of world politics you'll find anywhere. But most importantly of all the journalists asked basically, quote, most of your previous attempts to indict people over this sort of thing have failed dramatically. Well, why will this be any different? The government responded, our previous indictments haven't failed. Another journalist corrected him that half of them so far have, and more are failing all the time. Because the government has tried to indict alleged protesters in Minnesota already, and judges are throwing out these cases. I talked with one of the former defendants yesterday while preparing to record a podcast on the issue, and the person was clear that government indictments on flimsy cases, that they're desperate and flailing. They're clear that the judges in Minnesota are sick of the government's lies and bad legal arguments. The federal government is desperate to find a small group of people to pin the blame on. They're desperate to divide and conquer, to say, quote, these are the bad protesters, blame them. But as much as I love Minnesota and anarchists, and as much as I'm proud of their participation in the protests, the resistance to ICE occupation in Twin Cities involves more or less the entirety of those two cities. It was not limited to this or that ideological tendency. Never in my life have I seen such unity before, which includes a link. I didn't know if any of these indictments are going to stick. It looks like all the indictees are getting out of jail before trial, which is a good sign. But the state does seem to be making a bigger deal out of this particular case than previous ones. We've got reason to be optimistic, but people still deserve and need our support and solidarity. The state's most important weapon is fear. They want to pick a few people and slap them with charges to get everyone to stay home and to get everyone else to say, I don't know these people and I never do anything like that. They want to pit people off and isolate them. If they think they're going to fuck with the anarchists, then you've never read a history book. The people of Minneapolis know that. It's why they've been out in the streets in such great number. People know that fascism doesn't only come for the most vulnerable, it comes for us. If the state successfully pits off the bad protesters, they will expand that category. They've already had to expand it pretty broadly if it includes aggressive use of shields. At the arraignment of the defendants yesterday, the state attacked supporters gathered outside the courthouse. They're afraid, not for their lives, but for their legitimacy. It's hanging on by a thread. I don't think they're necessarily going to pick off anyone anymore, not this time. Whether the charges stick or not, we can stand behind the defendants. Twin Cities were the bulwark against ICE, and now these defendants are the bulwark against repression, so we'll stand behind them. And then there's a final sort of footnote here. And who knows, maybe next week I'll get to tell you how much I love books and not yet another terrible thing happening in the world. All right, that was a lot, and I think it's all good. What are your first impressions, whether of the article in particular or maybe the event in general?
Well, I think there's a couple different particularly interesting things about this piece. And I think part of it is this question of the criminalization of ideology via conspiracy charges, which I think a lot of folks maybe have only sort of a tenuous grasp on, is kind of worth exploring a little bit. But I think another part of it, there's this question of, you know, one of the things that she's kind of talking about is the ways in which propaganda against anarchists and anarchism has been successful, where it's almost divorced from ideology, and it becomes almost a term for tactics as opposed to a term for beliefs and ideology.
Yeah.
And then there's this question of, are people going to rise up and support these people? And sort of a broader question of, like, what does prisoner support mean? Or what does court support and jail support mean in the context of a movement?
Yeah. I also wanted to ask, you have a lot of experience doing, like, prisoner support and abolitionist work. When she mentioned sort of people being released already, and that's a good sign. Do you agree with that? Like, do you think, like, what are some of your predictions based off what's happening so far with the case? Like, do you think they're in a good position, or do you think it's going to be pretty bad?
I think it's kind of hard to predict. I personally think it's hard to predict with federal indictments, because even though it is at the federal level, you know, what judge you get varies considerably. And it's not, I mean, this kind of case is fairly, it's relatively rare. So I don't know about predicting. I will say one thing is that the release of people, and especially people being, like, if somebody's released on bail, right, which I don't know if that's exactly what she was saying had happened, but release on bail is usually somewhat of a decent sign, in the sense that the opposite, a judge saying, I'm not going to issue bail for you, right, is like a bad sign.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that, yeah, okay, it looks like she's saying that people are getting out of jail before trial, so presumably they've been bailed out. So that means that, first of all, bail was set for them. The judge doesn't think that they're a flight risk. The judge isn't so freaked out by the charges that they're not getting released. So yeah, I'd say that is a reasonably good sign. And it also bodes well for the case, in that if people are held until trial, they typically statistically do worse than if they are released before trial.
Right. One thing I want to point out is, there's a lot of things going on in my head. The obvious connection I can make to Prairie Land, which we'll talk about a little bit later, because there's some of the Judge O'Connor in that case said. But this sort of thing Killjoy is talking about, I'm trying to understand who this is written for. But this idea, it's like, oh, if you know, you fucked with anarchists, you haven't read a history book, or, you know, the state won't use the right definition of anarchism. And it's like, we have failed, I would probably guess, at like a majority of this work in the past. So I don't know what this, like, oh, we're a threat, like a material threat to the state, is coming from, that Killjoy seems to be implying, though that could just be like kind of a literary technique. But what history are we referring to in which we can be successful in stopping? Yeah, what's up? Just say what you're going to say.
Yeah, well, I think that she's saying not necessarily that you can't fuck with anarchists, but like, they're not only going to fuck with anarchists.
Okay.
The first they came for.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. So, and I think that's pretty accurate. And I think some people are picking up on that.
I see. Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I just misunderstood that part. I see now, yeah. And I guess, yeah, I was just going to be a little like that, just overly optimistic. But I guess that made sense, because I guess when it comes to political persecution of anarchists, historically, like, certain types of liberals, particularly liberal lawyers, will get in. Like, I think of Sacco and Vanzetti, because it's one of those, they at least know, like, if a certain reactionary force will persecute them, it will come for other groups that are less radical. But the other thing about, you know, the real definition of anarchism, first of all, that reproduces good anarchist, you know, good activist, bad activist.
Yeah.
that like there are some anarchists that is their politic is sort of a make total destroy. And this idea that like if you're not interested in sort of the orthodox anarchism, that that's kind of different. I don't know. And also the real quote unquote definition of anarchism is still a threat to the state.
Right.
So this idea of like just they're calling them anarchism. And it almost seems to be almost to a degree like, oh, well, they're not anarchists. Like we're just being alleged as anarchists. I understand sort of like the legal, like we're going to try and downplay some things about these people for the good of the case. And maybe that's where this is going. Like I think of, for example, like there's historic examples of that. I won't get into because I understand what Margaret's probably trying to do. Or I have a good guess. So I don't want to talk too much about negatively on that. I just have some concerns about when anarchism is on trial, so to speak, as a movement, and we downplay it, are we missing something? But we are also talking about human lives that are at risk.
Right.
But yeah, so those are some of my initial impressions, though I thought this was a really good write-up, generally, given any of my apprehensions.
Mm-hmm. Well, connected to that point, but maybe moving in a different direction, I've also noticed a lot of kind of like, almost like what I would characterize as a victim blaming of people in conversations that have happened about this.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like people being like, oh, well, it's because they like did this thing or they did that thing or like their OPSEC was this instead of that. And I think people don't realize, I think the reason people victim blame in general is often out of wanting to believe that they cannot experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's especially true in this case. Like, there seems to be, people seem to fundamentally not get that, like, if they had, you know, done this or that differently, then that is the thing that would have been on the charges.
Right.
You know, if you use Signal, you get in trouble because Signal is associated with stealthy behavior.
Right.
If you use, you know, Discord, then you get in trouble because Discord is public. Like, no matter what choices you make, if the state is trying to criminalize you, like
this fucked if you do, fucked if you don't situation. Exactly. Yeah.
And like this indictment is bonkers.
Like, right.
And they all are, like all of these sorts of conspiracy indictments. Same with, you know, the Cop City stuff. Same with Prairie Land.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's all connected.
Yeah.
That way. Yeah. And they mirror each other. Yeah. Yeah. And then also just talking about conspiracy as this arbitrary, I mean, all law is arbitrary. So I don't want to center that like conspiracy somehow more arbitrary than other laws or like other methods of the state, but like pointing out, and it's a good example of talking about how the state operates in arbitrary ways, but you know, and if I want to give it to Margaret pointing out then in my misunderstanding when they were like, you know, she was like, it's not just anarchists you're fucking with. There's the fundraiser. It's the Legal Defense Fund for Minneapolis or Minnesota anti-ICE organizers on Shuft. And they were hoping to get $250,000 and they got $265,000 and it was just over 3,000 supporters. That's probably not all anarchists, right? And so we can probably make a pretty good guess about that. So it's pretty powerful to see that, because I was looking up support and there's some stuff like that. And then I think one for an individual activist that the legal stuff is causing problems for, but like people came out monetarily to support people. Of course, as Margaret points out, were there outside. And I think they were like tear gassed, I believe. I didn't look into it closely, but they were attacked by police outside the courthouse. So, I mean, it is powerful to see the solidarity. Though I gotta say, you know, people talk about Minneapolis, Twin Cities and stuff as like this victory generally, and I have apprehension about that, where what was the victory? Because it was still, what, 3,000 people were taken?
Yeah,
I believe was the number, something like that. And, you know, there could be something to be said about, you know, it was this visibility that kind of delegitimized the new strategy for ICE, right, in a lot of ways, and that Trump has had to backpedal ICE's modern systems that he was trying to do. But if we're just going back to Obama era, like, is that a win in itself? I don't know. These are questions. I'm not saying I have an answer to that, but these are questions I'm thinking of, is because everyone's like, oh, like we're having all this culmination of, you know, we had the LA riots and this, and it's culminating, you know, on so many lessons from George Floyd. But it's like, these are all kind of been reactive defensive measures and not offensive proactive measures. And until we're taking those, I don't know if I can say we're winning. And I'm not saying Margaret's saying that by any means. Because I still feel good about what was done. I don't know. These are every time Minneapolis or Chicago or LA comes up, I think about these things.
Yeah, I think there was kind of honestly, like, I don't know. I'm inclined to seize victory when possible because there's so little.
Right.
There's so little that is positive.
Right.
But I also think there's a real difference. I mean, there was a period, there was a very short-lived, maybe half decade, where people were really taking prison and police abolition seriously, for example.
Right.
And it got really, really, I don't know, there was some sort of insidious thing that delegitimized police and prison abolition for people who otherwise had been supportive, who were like normies, right?
Right.
Who were less active politically, who were, you know, not in the loop on things.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a risk with ICE. I don't think that we're quite to the point where people understand that ICE is always bad.
Right.
We're almost there. It's like we're coming to a tipping point where people will realize that. But because of this sudden, I'm not an accelerationist. I think the best scenario is one in which people, sorry.
No, I'm just, I jokingly claim the accelerationist label, but not.
But no, I mean, I don't want more people to be seized and more people to be taken. Right.
Well, go on.
But I do think that when people were watching what was happening in Minneapolis, in LA, in Chicago, like that was pushing people towards a change in their attitudes about ICE. And it feels like when the visible pressure is off, I mean, people are, there's these mass hearings now and tons of people are getting deported all at once. But when it's not the physical and visible presence of ICE in these communities and people fighting back, like it's, I think a lot of people are like, oh, pressure's off, back to normal.
Right.
To your point.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, you're talking about the arrests. I don't think people, nah, never mind. That's an irrelevant point. But yeah, I want to connect this real quick to another article that came out. The 7 arrested over rail sabotage during Winter Olympics. I was talking to some people, particularly in the anti-civ scene, who were like, holy shit. Like, this reminds us of some old type shit. It reminds me of what goes on in Russia with BOAC's anarchist communist combat group, I think is how it's often translated. But yeah, it's 7 people have been arrested in Italy over suspected sabotage attacks on high-speed railway lines during the Winter Olympics earlier this year. Italian police said on Tuesday that the suspects, believed to belong to an anarchist militant network, were detained on suspicion of terrorism-related offenses. And it was explosives. According to investigators, sabotage was carried out using improvised explosive devices. Police said the anarchist group claimed responsibility for the attack, as well as a separate attack carried out at the same time on the Rome-Naples line in posts published on an Italian language blog created a few months before the incident. Quote, we set fire and damaged cables along the tracks, effectively blocking several high-speed lines. These actions are a contribution to the warm welcome and good wishes for this edition of the Winter Olympics Games. The Post added that the attack were, quote, ultimately expresses our anger at the presence of ICE agents at the event. And it was a 40-page political manifesto written in Italian, posted on the same website on Monday. The group also claimed responsibility for sabotaging Transalpine Pipeline, which transports oil from the ports of Trieste in Italy to refineries across Central Europe. It's the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni thanked law enforcement agencies for their work in tracking down, dismantling, quote, the anarcho-insurrectionist network. Also quoting, a heavy blow to those who believe they can threaten the nation's security, strategic infrastructure, and call into question the principles of democratic coexistence. It just seems like repression is back in the air. If we want to talk about where the wind is turning, it's repression. Because there was also an article, June 19th, 2026, from At for Freedom Now. A new repressive operation under Article 270 BIS. The occupation in Rome has been evicted and the arrests and searches have been taken several places. And it goes on about conspiracy for terrorist purposes, said to be related to sabotage carried out during the, yeah. So it's, again, kind of elaborating on conspiracy and how arbitrary that is and that can be used so easily against political dissidents. But I want to say another thing is, as anarchists, we should not be surprised by repression.
Yeah.
We are anti-state actors, philosophizers, thinkers, actors, whatever you want to say, whatever your relationship to that idea is, that we shouldn't be surprised by repression. I'm not saying like, oh, then we, you know, there's no work to be done in helping those people. I could be misinterpreted, but I think we should not be surprised by that, given the history. If we want to talk about the history books, like, this is just right. Like, anarchism, I think, is seeing a resurgence right now. So I'm not surprised to see the state cracking down. And that's in Italy, that is here, both in Minneapolis and now with the charges and now the sentencing of Prairie Land between 30 to 100 years, 30 years for having zines in your car. And yeah. And so there's the judge O'Connor said something to the extent of, you know, these are harsh sentences for the sake of, you know, threatening. I'll find the quote here. This is from the DFW support committee. Quote, Judge O'Connor stated that from the bench that he is giving maximum sentences to the Prairie Land sentences because, quote, the state wants to send a message to anyone who shares similar ideology, of which it's Antifa and anarchism. Antifa, to me, is the more abstract of the two for the state.
I still don't get, like, do you think they actually think there's, like,
I think some of them really do. I think some of them really do. If you're asking about the Antifa thing, I think some of them legitimately do and others don't care.
Uh-huh.
They don't care, but it's good for them. I think it's a mix. I think it's fair to say that some of them really, really do. But others, but it's hard to tell. I'm not going to pretend to know which one believes what.
Right.
Which one of these reactionary pieces of shit.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed to see a lack of more support for, like, particularly Prairie Land, because I think that's just a hot one where people are willing to admit, like, what the state is saying is true.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, well, these are the bad ones. We can't support them.
Well, people are so freaked out because of the guns. And,
right.
And the thing is, like, I kind of was like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's like people are just saying, oh, self-defense, but, like, whatever. But I was, like, watching the video that they have on the website, which is, like, the evidence video. And it's, like, actually very clear that it was, like, defensive firing. Like, it's, you can see, like, it doesn't even get anywhere near the cop.
Right. Also, the cop being injured definitely, like, shot himself.
Yeah.
Or was shot by someone. It was, like, a recoil.
Exactly.
Or not recoil, it was a, like, what am I thinking of? Rebound. It was, like, a rebound or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, this is nuts. But I think people get freaked out because there was a gun.
Yeah, 100%. And that, therefore, it's a bad faith, it's an agitator. So this, I mean, it happened to the Turtle Island Liberation Front. No one talks about them anymore. Everyone accused them of being feds. Everyone was accusing them. I saw it all. I'm not going to say everyone, that's bad. A lot of people online were like, these are not people I'm going to defend. And, like, you know, I threw up flyers about Prairie Land and stuff where we are. But it was, like, not a lot of conversation. I mean, the conversation was basically came out when they got the charges and not really before or after. Like, you saw this, like, in our spaces where people are more interested in what does this mean to me, for me? Which, yeah, that's an important conversation, but what can we do to support them, especially now? 3,200 years, that's functionally life sentences for most of these people.
Yeah.
Two of whom, am I speaking it correctly, two of whom are not citizens? Or is it just one? And now I feel like I shouldn't have brought it up if I don't remember correctly. But point being, like, for some of these people, that's like, there's a chance if you somehow get out, you're going to be deported right after.
Yeah.
Like, this is a life sentence for these people.
It's awful.
And so I guess my point of bringing all these together, and then again on June 20th, Italy, 26, about the 2016 raids, there, excuse me, the June 16 raids, which again is about that. New police raids hit the anarchist movement with seven arrest warrants against many comrades, five preventative detentions in prison, and two house arrests with electronic bracelets, searches throughout Italy, and the eviction of the social center in Rome. So now the class association for terrorist purposes. Again, it's terrorism by words, by thought, not by deed. Though I want to emphasize, even if it is by deed, we don't abandon them.
Right.
We don't abandon them.
Yeah.
But I want to return to Margaret's piece.
Could I really quick, though, please respond to something you mentioned about, like, apathy or people not being engaged?
Yeah.
I think a huge part of that is education and understanding the stakes. I think because of the legal complexities and the details too, it often feels like you're, you know, coming in, like you're reading the third book in a series and
right.
you don't know what happened before.
Right.
And I think so much of that is like making sure people understand from the get-go, but having a lot of opportunities to educate people about here's all the information. Because if you your first encounter with the Prairie Land stuff is like an update or whatever about something that,
right.
you know, and here's the most recent update and you have no context for it, it's very hard to, people should be doing the research, people should be doing the work to figure it out, but realistically, a lot of people won't. And so it's important, I think, for those of us who are doing prisoner support to really contextualize every single time it comes up.
Yes.
Like, here's what happened. Here's the context. And yes. here's what's happening right now. As opposed to just saying, oh, and by the way, did you know with Prairie Land, they got charged in this way?
Right. Well said. Yeah. And so to me, it's about anarchists need to have a serious conversation about repression, building resilience, thinking about security in your places of organizing or whatever you're doing. That does not mean security theater where each one of you, you think has like a Fed that watches you, because it's much more likely you're going to make little stupid mistakes and that's how you get caught. It's about not having a well-vetted group chat if you're going to have a group chat at all, which you probably shouldn't. I think more and more of that we really need to get over another civil group chat.
Yeah.
About not about abandoning this idea of the good anarchist, the bad anarchist, where, you know, the liberals say good activist, bad activist. For us, we need good anarchist, bad anarchist. We need to get over that shit. Especially now where I think more and more anarchists are floating towards like a more insurrectionary attack model. I think that is growing more popular through the lights of like Warzone Distro, or the, you know, more and more people reading about like the Italian and the Greek anarchist traditions. Which I think has begun in the last decade or so, and kind of moving away from this more respectable, legalistic cynicalism and organizing model. At least that's my interpretation. Maybe what I suspect is also the growth, regrowth of green anarchism in a different form, at least in some sense. And like, oh, historically, those have been somewhat abandoned as like threats to the red anarchist movement, like the communist syndicalist organizers. Who like there are hit pieces that are basically like, to me, read as like Fed investigations. And I think of certain people that do that now and just like really needed to come together in some sense. You know, it doesn't have to be in organizing, but like in spirit to like be able to support these people. And that doesn't mean just supporting the anarchists, but it does mean, because anarchists are so easy to be lost, that we need to always be aware. You know, Eric Keene talks about this, you know, as the formerly incarcerated anarchist, like just at least be writing to prisoners.
Yeah.
Write to prisoners, do some like bare minimum. You don't start anywhere about prison abolition before that.
Yeah.
To know and to humanize a prisoner.
Yeah.
To not have this abstract idea of what a prisoner is or what repression is. Like talk to these people intelligently. Don't talk about their cases unless they've been found guilty and they're not challenging. And there's different cases where some people are okay.
Yeah.
But in the case of like Minnesota, like don't write to these people or don't try to reach out about their cases. But yeah, I think about that. So I've been dwelling on that a lot. I don't know. I talked a lot right there. What do you think?
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I think the thing that gets missed, I think that we should be writing to incarcerated people, and especially to folks incarcerated within our movements, because it is important. And it's, I think the act of writing is somewhat abolitionist on its own, because mm-hmm. you're destroying this barrier.
Right.
But and also, of course, it provides the opportunity to support people who are taking political action within a prison system, learning about the conditions and things like that. So I think yeah. there's a lot of reasons kind of for themselves. But I think also writing to somebody who is incarcerated, especially if that person is incarcerated for political actions or perceived political actions or being alleged
to have
committed political whatever, that's also helping you, like it can make you braver. It can make you say, okay, like I'm gonna hold up a sign at this protest because I know that if they come after me for my speech, I know that just as I'm supporting this person, someone will support me. It's like a pay it forward almost. It helps you understand that you know, as what does Margaret Kiljoy say? She says something like, you know, it's not only going to be the anarchists, right? Let me see. Okay. If you think they're only going to fuck with the anarchists, then you've never read a history book. So if you realize, oh, I could get fucked with too. Oh, if they're going after thought crimes, everyone is potentially guilty. Then you need to be writing to incarcerated people because you are acknowledging that your mere existence as a thinking person is something that could someday get you in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to know that there are people who are going to be committed to you like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think about my own interactions with the federal government over social media posts that were like really not that intense compared to what I've somehow seen other people post, particularly on Instagram and like Twitter or now X. I like have not been visited, but I've been visited by the federal government before for like online criticism for like really like non-radical shit, like criticisms of Israel. And this is before October 7th, where I was then asked like if I was like an anti-Semite. And then they asked me about like my political identification. But like that was just for like really innocuous shit. It was stupid, which is why I don't have social media like that anymore or posts like that. But like I think about that later. And that's minor. Like that was a threat. Like for 6 months, I became like uber paranoid. And like that fucked with me really bad. And, but it doesn't compare to it actually being incarcerated and having your any sense of agency or autonomy we have under capitalism be totally taken from you. And under the state being taken from you and being put into this the worst possible repression in like the empire as like a prisoner. But yeah. I don't know any. I was thinking we could wrap it up. Any concluding thoughts? My whole thing is right to a prisoner, political or not, right to a prisoner.
Yeah, I'll co-sign that.
Cool. Well, I thank you for listening. This is the Anarchist News Podcast, and this is for June 28th, Sunday. Thank you for listening.
This week's extremely short podcast was sound edited by Rosinante. The What's New is written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and
Rob Ovine Colostra. Rawovine Colostra.
We hope this podcast gets useful to and fun for anarchists and the anarchist community. Yo no sé qué siento.